Welcome to the Arbitration Conversation with Amy Schmitz.
Hello, and welcome to the Arbitration Conversation. In this Arbitration Conversation, we have a true leader in technology and dispute resolution, and specifically resolving technology disputes. We have Peter Vogel. Peter Vogel has been a lawyer for more than 30 years. He combines his technical and business background with his legal expertise to help companies with information technology, blockchain, cryptocurrency, cyber intrusion, internet litigation, dispute resolution, M&A, and contract negotiation. He's been involved with the IT industry, internet, and electronic data for his entire career. He actually has not only his JD, but he has a master's in computer science. In fact, I had the pleasure, I could go on. He has so many accolades. He's a top lawyer and is always noted for that throughout Texas, very well known. And I had the opportunity to meet him in discussing resolving blockchain disputes. So I thought, wow, I would love to have him on the Arbitration Conversation. So Peter, thank you for taking the time.
Well, Amy, thank you so much for inviting me to join you. And this is very exciting to me because I have been involved in ADR virtually most of my life. So it's kind of a fun thing to talk about.
Oh, well, we're happy to have you. I mean, just looking at your background, it's so amazing. What kind of was the real impetus, you know, thinking about your being in ADR and in dispute resolution for such a long time? Can you think of any kind of experience or was there anything along the way that really sort of prompted your interest in dispute resolution?
Well, amazingly enough, as you pointed out, I've got a master's in computer science, so I'm kind of a gizmo head IT guy. But everybody in my family is a CPA, father, brother, uncle, cousins. And my father was an arbiter for the American Arbitration Association as a CPA when I was in college. It was kind of amazing. The guy who started the Dallas office here was a friend of my father's and invited him to be an arbiter. So I joined the American Arbitration Association as an arbiter in 1986, which was kind of way ahead of the curve at the time, I think. And then that was in the arbitration arena, but amazingly enough, Texas, I'll say this, I'm proud that I'm a Texan, but in 1987, Texas passed the Alternatives Dispute Resolution Act that established mediations. And I started mediating disputes in 1990. And by 1992, every case in the state of Texas, state and federal, requires a mediation. So it's kind of changed the focus of how the trial practice operates in this state. And I've had cases, actually I've mediated cases all over the United States over the years.
Yeah, wow, that's a long time to be in the industry. And that's just, you know, amazing sort of all the different experiences you must have had over time. You know, I'd love to hear more about sort of what evolution you've seen in the dispute resolution practice and especially in your own practice.
Well, as you pointed out, you know, I've got an information technology practice. But in addition to that, I've also had patent infringement cases, copyright infringement, trade secret misappropriation, and trademark infringement. So I do a lot of intellectual property, but I have gone out of my way my entire career to not be an intellectual property lawyer. Or, you know, neutral. I'm trying to be an information technology specialist. And the fact that I do both helps a lot because I negotiate and draft all kinds of intellectual property licenses. That's what I do in my day job. Also, cloud agreements and all these things on the internet and e-commerce. And so now, as everyone's using the cloud, all our clients, all the businesses all over the world, I've been arbitrating and mediating cloud disputes and intellectual property disputes all over the world as a neutral.
Yeah, I bet you there's a lot of overlap, you know, that you do run into IP questions, even though there's, you know, maybe licensing or contract or other issues as well.
Well, yeah, but the other beauty, and I had a really complex patent infringement case that I was the panel for three arbiter panel for the American Arbitration Association. And what was interesting was when we had a Markman hearing and when we got done with it, we said, do you want a Markman ruling? Because under the patent laws in the United States, if we had given a Markman ruling, it would have been filed with the patent office. And so then when the case was over, we said, do you want a reasoned award or the standard award? Because if we gave a reasoned award and there was infringement, that would have to be reported to the patent office. So there are a lot of things to think about in that. The other part about that case that I thought was so fascinating was the parties agreed in the arbitration provision in their contract that from the time the case started until the hearing was concluded would be less than 12 months. So it didn't go on for years and years, and it didn't cost millions and millions of dollars. So the arbitration was a great alternative to going to court.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, and it seems to me, I mean, you and I have talked about this as well, having an expert arbitrator in these technology-related disputes to me just seems like a huge benefit over going to court. But the time factor is also important. Certainly speed is absolutely a key question, especially when you're talking about intellectual property and who has rights to different intellectual property, I imagine.
Well, yes, but also when I had a patent infringement case where the parties were one in Taiwan and another in Canada, and they were fighting about U.S. patents. And so I agree with you. It took somebody as an arbiter to understand the dynamics of those two countries and the U.S. and how that fit together. But one of the things I do in arbitrations, I'm not sure quite why this happens, but I often am the chair of panels that I'm on. But one of the things that I always do is if the parties have a discovery dispute, I tell them not to file anything, to send me an email saying they have a dispute. And I promise to have a hearing within 24 hours. And I would say about 99% of the time we resolve stuff without having motion practice and the parties move on with the discovery and it speeds up the whole arbitration process.
Oh, absolutely. I'd have to say that makes complete sense, especially when you're talking about arbitration, you know, not to spend a lot of time fighting about discovery, especially in a formal matter. So that's a very good practice. You know, speaking of sort of tips, after all of your many years of experience and having mediated, arbitrated, what would you say are sort of your top five tips that you would think of off the top of your head in terms of for an arbitrator, especially in a technology related dispute?
Well, one of the things I think is at the top of the list is to make sure that the parties have an opportunity to express themselves and make sure that everything is clearly in writing about what their positions are. And the second thing that I do, and I this is not always real popular, but normally in the preliminary hearing, I always tell the parties, since I've been an arbiter since 1986, I have never granted the dispositive motion. So if you want to file one, go ahead, but I don't know what the real reality is. And one of the reasons I do that is the training that I have gotten as an arbiter has always been the only reason, other than some kind of fraud, which I don't think I get involved in, but the only reason that an arbitration is vacated is because the arbiter fails to consider all the evidence. And if you have a dispositive motion, you usually don't see all the evidence. And so that's why I'm against that as a concept. I think the third part, the issue that may be important, is that I always make a point of asking questions after the parties finish examining witnesses. And I do the same when I'm on a panel, as we always wait. And I know that there are some panelists that don't think that that's important, but I do think it's important to get the questions answered because sometimes the parties don't know how to put things out on the table. And then kind of another issue, kind of unrelated to anything we've talked about, and that is I have served as a special master. Now we're referring to it as a special neutral. And as a matter of fact, I'm on the board of the Academy of Court-Appointed Neutrals and on the ABA Committee on Court-Appointed Neutrals. And that is, there is a role for neutral third party to help in complex cases where an arbiter could hire me to help with an intellectual property or information technology issue that's in the case so that someone who is unfamiliar with that area of technology doesn't have to, you know, make all the decisions. That's my role when I'm in court, as I step in the shoes of a judge. So I'm just thinking that is something that I have found over the years. And we in the neutral community are really pushing to encourage more arbiters to engage special neutrals to help with complex technology issues. So then I guess the final topic with, that comes to mind, I'm not sure I got to five, but the final one that comes to mind is that I think the critical part that I have as an arbiter is to be fair and just and unbiased. And sometimes that's difficult to do as a trial lawyer. I've had cases in 38 states. And the one thing that I've seen is sometimes judges are biased. And you can tell that in the courtroom. And that's something I work very hard to avoid, any kind of appearance of bias as an arbiter.
Oh, yeah, that seems to me a absolutely essential beyond compare. I mean, in talk about overturning an arbitration award, I mean, any sort of appearance of bias can certainly make an award vulnerable to vacature.
Well, and I had a case years ago where I was representing a party in an arbitration, and the biased chair of the panel allowed someone to testify on behalf of his client, the claimant in the case, about what happened that led up to the contract being signed. And that particular individual wasn't even employed by the company at the time, and he didn't negotiate the contract, but the arbiter allowed him to testify about what happened in the negotiations. Stuff like that to me is crazy that that's even acceptable.
That's terrible. Yeah, it is surprising when things like that happen. It's just unbelievable. Well, those are great. It's a great list of sort of tips to think about, especially given your experience and what you've been looking at over the years. You know, the other piece I mentioned earlier on the evolution, you mentioned the cloud and kind of more cases dealing with the cloud. But are there any other sort of trends or kind of evolution of cases that you've seen over the years?
Well, I'm glad you pointed that out as a highlight on the cloud, because virtually every single company operating in 2023 uses cloud computing in some sort or other. But virtually no one does anything to make sure that the cybersecurity protections are in place. And I think we're going to see more disputes driven to arbitrations dealing with cybersecurity intrusions, because right now, If in the cloud agreements, as a matter of fact, I just saw one today that I was looking at for a new client, and they are going to sign up for an accounting system, an ERP system, and it's cloud-based, and it's a mandatory arbitration provision in that contract. So I think we're going to see more kinds of disputes dealing with cybersecurity and protection of data as a reality of using the cloud.
That's interesting. That's a really good point, and certainly an area that I would imagine. Again, it makes sense. You can get an expert in the field. It's private. Arbitration is private, so that makes sense, especially if there's sensitive data. So, I'm not surprised at all that that's an area of growth for arbitration. Any other areas?
Well, I mean, dealing with privacy and credit card information and the stuff. I mean, these are the kinds of things I do day in and day out. And in my practice, half of what I do is contract negotiating and drafting. So I'm involved in a lot of the cybersecurity intrusions and trying to write contracts to protect customers in this space. So I think that's going to continue, because it's continuing at the courthouse. And right. I think we're seeing, and the other thing is, as I think everyone listening would agree, about 99% of the population never look at online terms. They just kind of do a click agreement and that's it. And the reality is, I think we're going to have more cases going to arbitration as a result of that, because people don't even realize that they're committing to arbitration.
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, even my own research many years ago on whether consumers read their contracts, and they don't, which we know is true. I mean, we all have to admit we don't have the time, especially when they're long and laborious. What about, do you see with respect to blockchain? And you and I have had some chance to talk a bit about this. Maybe you want to share with some of the listeners. Where do you see sort of the trajectory in terms of arbitration involving blockchain and cryptocurrencies?
Well, I think that it's going to be a huge facet of the ADR community going forward because of the use of smart contracts in crypto currency agreements and also in NFTs, that the smart contract, which is, I think, neither smart nor a contract, but it is really software that allows the parties to create an agreement. So one of the problems associated with it that you and I discussed is, first of all, people challenging it are going to go to court. So you have to get past the courthouse to even get to arbitration, even if it's in the smart contract. So I think we're going to see a bunch of these kinds of disputes going forward in the near term.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think these types of disputes are not going away. And that's another circumstance where there is an arbitration clause in many related contracts. With respect to blockchain and cryptocurrency as well. Yeah. Well, any other thoughts that you have that you wanted to share with listeners, kind of thinking about, again, the theme being thinking of all that you've done over the years and the evolution, your tips for arbitrators, certainly your wisdom. We really appreciate that. Any other thoughts that you'd like to share?
Well, no, I think I've pretty much shared, you know, my perspective on the world here, and I appreciate the opportunity, and maybe at some future time we'll be able to get together and be on a program together one more time.
I sure hope so, because it was so much fun, and I really, really do appreciate your wisdom and your experience, and certainly in this area, I doubt there's anyone, well, I'm sure, but there's very few individuals who have your kind of experience in this area of arbitration, mediation, and negotiation. So I really do appreciate it. And thank you for taking the time with us today.
Well, thank you for having me, Amy. It's great to talk to you.
This podcast was brought to you by arbitrate.com. For more information about arbitrate.com's programs and content, please visit our website at www.arbitrate.com.